This is the Sunday of joy. Although, interestingly enough, we can't get the joy candle to light. It's kind of appropriate at times, isn't it? What do we mean by joy? Where is the joy to be found in this world? Where is joy to be found? It might shine on a candle for a moment, but where is joy to be found in your life and in my life? The story in Ezra that was just read depicts a pivotal moment in the life of Israel. Israel had three pivotal moments in their life. The first pivotal moment was when they left Egypt. The prince of Egypt, I don't know if you remember that old animated video of Moses taking the people out of Egypt. That story of Exodus, when Moses led the people out of Egypt, it's in that moment they become constituted as a people, as a real nation. They become a real nation in the eyes of other nations around the world. It's the effective beginning of a people. Everything before the story of the Exodus is a pre-story, a prequel to the people of Israel. It tells us where they came from, but it's this moment of Exodus, when they leave Egypt, they leave the bondage of Egypt, that they become a somebody, a something. And the second pivotal moment in the life of Israel is about 600 years later, when the city of Jerusalem, the home city of David, the capital city of Judea, of Israel, is sacked and destroyed by the Babylonians. In that moment, the temple of God, the most sacred shrine in all of ancient Israel, is knocked down. This moment represents the complete and utter defeat of Israel in life. And worse, the Babylonians take most of the people of Israel and they take them to a foreign land. They move them. They take them into exile. This is the moment of exile for the people of Israel, which in practical terms means death. Because every ancient people who had ever been taken into exile after defeat disappears from history. They're gone. To be exiled to a foreign land is to disappear from history, is to die. To be exiled is to die. It's something that we don't fully understand as modern people. When the philosopher Socrates was found guilty of sedition and the corruption of community standards, he was offered either death or exile as his punishment. The sentence was death or exile. In the ancient world, death and exile were essentially the same thing. And interestingly enough, Socrates chose death over exile. And the third pivotal moment in the life of Israel is when Israel comes back home again, from exile. They come back home again. That occurred roughly 50 years later when the Syrian king Cyrus allowed them to return home. See, the Persians had conquered the Babylonians, and they had a different approach to the conquered peoples that they were in charge of. And they allowed Israel to go home again and to rebuild Jerusalem and even to put up a new temple to God. And this is the moment in the book of Ezra when the foundations of the new temple, what's commonly referred to as the second temple, are laid. And as you can imagine, in that moment, it was a time of great joy, of celebration. It signified that they had come through a time of great trial. They had walked through the shadow of the valley of death, and they had gotten to the other side. They made it through. More importantly to them, it meant also that God had not abandoned them to their fate. It signaled to them that God had been with them all along, even in the exile. See, that's the big question in the Old Testament. It's the big question that lurks behind every writing in the Old Testament. The essential issue being dealt with in the Old Testament is about God's faithfulness. Will God abandon his people to their fate? Will God abandon his people to the ferociousness of life? Will God abandon people to death that inevitably follows from the ferociousness of life? Or will God find a way to deliver his people to a new future? And there is Israel, back in their homeland again. Of all ancient peoples, they made it through death. Exile, they made it through death. They made it to the other side. They made it. Hallelujah. They made it. So you can imagine there was great joy in that moment when they laid the foundation stones for the new temple. This was the reestablishing of their life, of their world as they understood it. And it all began with the laying the foundation of the temple. It was a time of great rejoicing and celebration. But interestingly, in the crowd, there are older members, older priests, older religious leaders, other older noteworthies who had seen the old temple. And they remembered the old days. They remembered the glory of Israel that had been passed on to them. A legacy that had come to them from King David himself. Maybe a legacy that you could take all the way back to Moses had come all the way down to them. And in that moment for them, when the foundation stone is laid, they actually begin to weep because they remember all that's been lost. They understood, unlike the others, what had been lost. They had contact with that old way of life, and they understood in that moment what had been lost to them forever. So you have this really interesting scene at the laying of the foundation of the second temple. You have this interesting scene. There's both great rejoicing in amongst the majority of the group, but there's a great lamentation going on together. There's celebrations, and there's a wailing. There's happiness and sadness. All in one moment, it becomes indistinguishable in the crowd. You can't really tell one from the other. It's just as if the people of Israel are both laughing and crying at the same time. It's an interesting experience to laugh and cry at the same time. Has that ever happened to you? Have you cried and laughed at the same time? It's only happened to me a few points in my life, a few moments in my life. For me, it's usually a moment of tragedy mixed with hilarity or absurdity or irony. They come together in the moment, and it's almost as if I'm laughing and crying. Two parts of me, one laughing, one crying, have come together as one. I mentioned to you last week that fear is a signal to us. I think I would really encourage you to understand fear as a signal. It comes to you. It's neither in itself good or bad. A signal is a signal. It tells us, at least fear does, tells us that we are coming up to an edge or a potential moment of risk for us, a danger point. Like a cliff edge, like a literal cliff edge, the one we saw last week from the Grand Canyon. Or when you're standing high up on a ladder and you know how precarious you are up way up there on that ladder. And those fear signals that come to us simply point out to us that we're in a moment of potential danger. People get afraid of many things, for sure. We can get afraid of spiders. We can get afraid of public speaking. We can get afraid of conflict. And there may be times when we want to ask ourselves why we're afraid. Why do we experience fear in that moment? Why do we imagine there's potential danger for ourselves in that moment? But that's a completely different matter to the question of the fear signal itself. The fear signal is pretty straightforward. You've come up to an edge. You're at a moment of risk to yourself as you understand it. And it occurred to me that peace could also be a signal to us as well. Remember, the signal itself is neither good or bad. It's just this. It's a form of inner communication for us. And if peace is a signal, like fear, then what is peace signaling to us in the moment? And I think peace signals to us that we're in a time of relative safety and security. We feel safe and secure in the moment. We feel protected and safeguarded. It's often a moment of peace comes to us in a moment we feel well and healthy too. We feel a sense of confidence in the moment and in the immediate future. And we feel this peace come over us. And when we talk about the peace of God or the peace of Christ, which passes all human understanding in our services each Sunday, we are talking about a signal of peace that comes from the reality of God who is with us. the God who is in our lives. The peace of God that comes to us is a signal that tells us that we are living at the center of our relationship with the Lord in the moment. The peace of God is a signal that comes to us that allows us to know when and we experience God's closeness in our lives, the abiding presence of God and God's love and goodness for us. Now, if peace is a signal and if fear is a signal, and both signals are neither good or bad, they simply are forms of communication, then there might be other kinds of signals that can come to us on the inside as well. And their absence might tell us a bit of information about us, what's going on for our lives too. If we don't experience peace, especially if we don't experience the peace of God for us, it might tell us that something's absent in our lives that's really important to us. And I'm going to suggest to you today that joy is also a signal that comes to you and me. And what is the reality that joy, the joy signal, points to in us? If fear tells us that we're at the edge, we're near the edge, and if peace tells us we're living and abiding in the center point of our relationship with God, then what is joy signaling to us in our lives? And what's joy's absence? What is the absence of the joy signal telling us about our lives too? You know, in some ways, I think joy is the most elusive of all emotions. It's the most precarious of signals. Fear, yes. Sadness, of course. Grief, inevitable. Happiness, okay. Peace, hopefully, perhaps. But joy, how many of us know that deep sense of joy in our lives? That really deep sense of joy. How many of us know that deep sense of joy on a continuous basis in our lives? Not just in a momentary flickering of a candle, but deep down living with us a lot of the time. What is the joy signal pointing to in your life? What is joy really about? What is joy signaling for us? What is its absence pointing out to us about our own lives? You know, the Catholic priest and spiritual teacher Henry Nouwen wrote in his book, Life Signs, the following, and I have it up on the slide there, Liz. He says this: I vividly remember how one of my university teachers spoke for a whole year about anxiety in human life. He discussed in great detail the thoughts of Kierkegaard, Sartre, Heidegger, and Camus, and gave an impressive expose of the anatomy of fear. Those are all four existentialist philosophers. One day during the last month of the course, a few students found the courage to interrupt him and ask him to speak a little about joy before the course was over. At first, he was taken aback, but then he promised to give it a try. The next class, he started hesitantly to speak about joy. His words sounded less convincing and penetrating than when he spoke about anxiety and fear. Finally, after two more meetings, he told us that he had run out of ideas about joy and would continue his interrupted train of thought. This event made a great impression on me, especially since I had such great admiration for my teacher. I kept asking myself why he was unable to teach about joy as eloquently as he had taught about fear and anxiety. I find that a curiosity too. I've noticed also in my own life that I have a much closer sense of understanding and appreciation for fear and anxiety in my life, sadness and pain, than I do understand and can talk about joy. How do we really speak about joy in life? You know, when my leg hurts or my head aches or my eyes burn or my heart stings, I can talk about that with anyone, pretty much anyone, in elaborate ways. Probably you can too. But when I'm perfectly well, I have almost nothing to say. What do I say about my body parts when they're feeling good? What is there to be said, really? Words about joy often sound trite, superficial, or sentimental. They seldom seem to touch us as deeply as words about anguish, fear, or pain. Words about joy seldom seem to touch the source. So much so that joy, real joy, not its imposters, but real joy, is elusive for many. Because joy is more than just simple momentary happiness. I think we understand that. It goes beyond elation or even euphoria. There's something ecstatic about joy. There's something about joy that causes us to stand outside of ourselves, to go beyond ourselves, which is not an easy thing to do because we spend most of our time trying hard to be me or trying hard to be you. To stand outside yourself is not an easy thing to do. For some of us, it's actually impossible. I have heard people express to me the joy of holding their newborn baby. Imagine some of you have had that experience, right? Some of you, not all. That moment when you held your newborn, that was a moment of joy for many. For me, it was a moment of fear, but that's another story, I suppose, right? Intimidation. You know those moments of joy that move you beyond yourself? For a moment, you disappear. You just disappear. You're not important in the moment. And that's a good thing. Something or someone else has replaced you in the moment. That's a good thing. Something holy and blessed has come to you and it's pushed you aside, and that is a good thing for you. And that's joy, too. You know, there's a real sense of freedom that comes from being freed from being you or me and allowing something else good to come through us in the moment instead of ourselves. And it starts to make sense to me that when I experience the joy signal in life, and I've been thinking about this, I'm being told by that signal that life in the moment isn't about me. I've somehow moved out of the way of something important that wants to come through me. See, when you're sick or in pain or you're suffering in some form, the whole movement of life is about you. It's about you. When one is in pain, and I think we all understand this, when we're in pain, it's hard not to become self-obsessed. That's why I don't like being sick, because I don't want to be self-obsessed about me, but it's almost impossible not to be. It's inevitable when you're not feeling well in one form or another. With joy, we move away from the world, right? We move away from being ourselves. We're free from that. Our lives are open to something or someone beyond us. Henry Nouwen thinks that this means that joy is actually deeper, a more intimate, a more normal condition for us than pain and suffering. The joy is actually a more normal condition for us than sadness or hurt that we find in life. See, the sinful world that we live in is all about making my life about me and your life about you. When my life is about me, I'm almost inevitably inviting in pain and suffering into my existence. That is not how we're meant to live. Jesus promises a joy, promises us a life of joy. If we allow him to come and live through us. We say it here at Trillium, to awaken the Christ light in each other and shine it in the world. The awakened light shines through us and we experience the signal of joy. If joy is absent, it means that we're not allowing the light to shine through us. We've somehow got in its way. We have stepped in the way of the light, and our task in life, the discipline of life that comes to us as a follower of Jesus, is to learn how to step out of the way of the light. That light that's meant to shine through us. Jesus says in the Gospel of John, he says, if you keep my commands, you will remain in my love just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete, total, absolute. Love is the way we step out of the way of the light. We keep the command of Jesus to love one another, and we step out of the way of the light that's meant to shine through us. That's how we experience joy in life. The joy signal that comes to us informs us if we're stepping out of the way of the light that's meant to shine through us. Now, Jesus' joy does not cancel the tragedy of life. We live within the tragedy of the world, which means we will experience the signal of grief. Alongside fear and peace and joy, we will experience grief. It's inevitable, too. The grief signal tells us that we have lost something important to us, just like those old members of the community of Israel experienced when they were standing when the first stone of the temple, of the new temple, was being laid. The disciples themselves experienced the signal of grief in Jesus' death. Jesus' words did not take that from them. There is no escape from this. There is a tragic reality to life that we all know about. It's what it means to live in this world. But remember, in the end, your life is not ultimately about you. It's about what's being expressed through you and who is being expressed through you. Interestingly, it is often in the tragedies of life that we learn to step aside and allow something or someone to shine through us. As Jesus says, if you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. I've told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete in every situation. As the story in Ezra reminds us, we are at times capable of experiencing more than one signal in the moment. Joy can come to us by itself, and that's a wonderful experience. Joy to the world, the Lord has come. That's a wonderful experience to have joy in its pure form, but often the signal of joy comes to us alongside other signals, including the signals of grief and sorrow. Long time ago, when my father passed away, that first week after his death was a time of great sorrow and sadness in my life. I experienced the signal of sorrow and sadness in me. It was also a time of great meaning for me, profound meaning, a deep sense of connection with family and friends, with life itself, that has been unequaled in my life. In that moment, that week after my father's death, I was connected to something bigger to me, and I felt a great joy in that week, alongside the grief and the sadness. In spite of my loss, I felt a great joy in my life in that moment, unequaled. You see, I knew in that moment better than I've ever had before or afterwards that my life is not about me. It's not about me. And your life, you know, is not about you either, really. My life was not about me. My life is not about me. It's about what comes through me. And when you and I, when we live in the moment, when we allow the light to shine through us, when we allow something greater than ourselves that is good to come through us, whatever else we are experiencing, it is inevitable that the joy signal will come to us too.